It's the Infectious Groove Podcast, recorded at the 33 and the 3rd Music Appreciation Center in Speakeasy, just outside of Detroit, Michigan. The Infectious Groove Podcast is your source for jammy jams, music news, and the best in-depth music discussion. Now here's your host.
Heyo, it's Russ, along with Kyle and Michelle. Kyle and Michelle, how you guys doing?
Not so bad.
We're good.
Well, you want to take that again? You know, on the bonus episodes, I'm never as enthusiastic enough for you.
No, that's when you ask me if I have.
Oh, that is this one, yeah, where I ask you, oh, well, I just reminded myself, so there's a good chance I'll get it right this time.
Okay.
Having said that, Michelle, how you doing?
Great!
and that's what a red line sounds like on a recording console. You guys, it's episode 27.
Yay.
And holy shit. On top of that, get your golf clap ready. We have our very first in-studio guest with us for this episode. Put your glasses on. He's right across from you. Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard him talked about a lot. You've heard his opinions disparaged. You've heard his opinions encouraged. Please welcome to the studio, friend of the show, Joe. Yay.
Thank you.
Now, my first question for you, Joe, is how long will it take you to get through your list of complaints you have with and about Michelle?
This is an hour show, right?
Yeah.
Loosely.
Yeah.
This is part one?
Yeah, this is
of an ongoing.
Correct. So, is it the whole hour?
I would like them alphabetically, not chronologically.
I can rearrange it all.
He's got a spreadsheet that he's clicked the filter.
Yep,
he's good to go. And so, having said that, we are very excited to have Joe along with us for the ride, and this should be fun. We are going to have a fun one this time. We're talking about...
How you doing, people? I'll tell you something really cool. Tonight is Saturday night. What do you say we have a rock and roll party?
I say we have a rock and roll party, Paul Stanley. You know what?
I would love a rock and roll party.
Paul Stanley has offered you one. You know how? Because he's one of the greatest front men ever. And, like, I'm not even a huge KISS fan. And
I was just about to say, I didn't think you liked KISS that much.
All day, every day, that guy is in the discussion as far as best front men. That's for sure. So that is what we are going to talk about later. Now, we're not necessarily getting into the greatest. We're not counting them down. We're not like, oh, this is definitely the top five. We're just talking about some of our favorites and why. And before we even get going, we're going to derail the discussion by deciding what exactly a front man is. So look forward, like Joe said, that's going to be about the first hour and a half. It's going to be that. So we're going to set up some rules and whatnot. So, one thing I want to touch on at the beginning of the show, like I did last week, please remember that you can find us on all of the social media. So we're on Instagram at Infectious Groove Pod. We're on Facebook at Infectious Groove Pod. We're on Twitter at Infectious_Pod. You can Gmail us directly at InfectiousGroovePodcast@gmail.com. Attention, Michelle. And if you would like
complaint
to become...
Complaint department.
Yeah, complaint department. That's what I said. Attention, Michelle. Yeah.
Directly to the trash.
Yeah, directly in the bin. And if you want to be like friend of the show, Joe, and be a supporter of the show, you can go to anchor.fm/infectiousgrouppodcast, hit that support button, and give us $1 a month, or as little as $1 a month, or more. Yeah.
Just kidding.
We would ask that you make at least $1 donation for every time you email Michelle a complaint, which is, by my calculation, hold on, carry the 9. We should be millionaires in a week.
Every time you curse my name in your car, you owe me $1.
Oh, man. Then,
is there an eye roll jar here? Do you guys have like an eye roll jar?
Yes, we do. I'll show it to you.
Schmidt jar?
Right. So moving right along, we are going to get into our normal segments.
Music news.
Kyle, what's happening?
Well, there is some new music supposed to be coming out.
Oh, yeah. I guess I should have clarified. We're recording this on Thursday night, and we think there's new music coming
tomorrow.
Yeah,
so it's all supposedly. I don't know. There's nothing been... Well, I lied. So Logic is releasing an album that has been confirmed. Taylor Swift and Kanye West are supposed to be releasing albums as well.
So by the time everyone's listening to this on Monday, either that's fact or not.
Yes.
Right. Logic is fact.
Yeah, Logic is fact. That's his last album. He's retiring, and he's going to... You know, raise his kid and take care of his family now.
And there may or may not be
a
Kanye and Taylor album. Not together.
Not the same album.
But the same album.
Don't tease me like that.
Right. And we talked about this ahead of time, and I at least I want to back up on some comments I made last week when I was just saying, shut up, Kanye, repeatedly about the political situation. I do not in any way, shape, or form think that the political issues going on in the country should be messed with. So I stand by my shut up, Kanye, as far as that goes. But I was reminded, and Kanye is such a genius and he's so brilliant. And I mentioned this on the show before, but, you know, I did get to spend some time like working side by side with him. And he was so brilliant in person. Like his mind, he was saying things about like consumer electronics that were way above my head. And I've worked in the industry for years. And it's very easy for me and all of us to forget that there are mental illness issues there.
Yeah.
So a lot of time for me, it's just I instantly get angry. Like if it was Weird Al saying something about politics or whatever else to be funny, I would be like, shut up, Al.
Yeah.
You know, and so my comments last week had nothing to do with that aspect of it. It was just, you know, if you're going to do your thing and you're going to do like manipulate the public, for lack of a better term, like just not right now with the political.
Yeah, and sometimes it's confusing when it comes to celebrities differentiating what is for attention and what is actually a underlying problem.
Yeah.
And he confirmed has underlying issues mentally.
Right.
And it appears that he's having a manic episode currently. And everyone, I mean, even his wife is speaking out about it.
Her statement was excellent.
Yes. Too sure. It was so good that I thought that she didn't even write it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It sounded like it was written by somebody
else. Well, I'll tell you, I will say this much. We obviously don't get a lot into the Kardashians on the show, but those ladies aren't where they are because they're dumb.
Oh, yeah.
Totally. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, it's gotten to the point where, I mean, Dave Chappelle took a flight out to Kanye's compound to make sure he was okay. Yeah. Like, it's getting to that point where people are concerned. And
that's cool of Chappelle to pay it forward, too, because when Chappelle was having issues, a lot of people stepped up for him. And, you know, we'll just bull rush you right into this, Joe. Like, what are your thoughts on the whole Kanye thing? Like, does it matter to you that he might disrupt the political landscape, or?
No. Because I didn't.
Man of many words.
All right, everybody, that was friend of the show, Joe. No, go ahead.
Goodbye. No, because I think the political landscape has been carpet bombed. Yeah. So there's nothing for him to destroy. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to differentiate between a manic episode for him or what is going on in his mind. Mm-hmm. For the normal person, it is, you know.
Yeah.
But for him, everything toes a line. He's either a batshit crazy genius, or he's having a manic episode, and there's the finest of lines between it.
Yeah, and I don't know why I never think of that. And he's been through this before, so we know this. And I'm a huge Axl Rose fan, and the guy is like the textbook definition of bipolar with, you know, issues, and it's someone who's almost been like trained to see that after, you know, having been a fan of Axl for 40 years. I was like taken aback by it. Somehow that it slipped my mind.
And I think it's easier to understand, too, for, like, your average person. We are not good, but okay with talking about, you know, feeling depressed and whatnot, or, you know, feeling like you're going crazy. But people don't really think about that when they talk about celebrities. Mm-hmm. Because celebrities have all the money in the world. They have no problems. The money solves everything. It's not the case.
There's a real empathy barrier.
Yes, there is. Yep, and it's, you know, he's a celebrity. He can figure it out. He's rich, right?
He should have every resource in the world at his disposal. Yeah. But a lot of times, in cases like his, that doesn't matter.
Yep.
It just doesn't matter.
He has the same kind of brain as a regular person, and it's not working well right now. So.
So, you know, like I say, I hope no one took what I said the wrong way, but I wish nothing but the best for him, for all of us, you know.
I think a lot of people felt the same way that you did.
Yeah.
Until people are now speaking out about, I mean, you got his own wife talking about what's going on. So it's like, now people are starting to understand a little better that there is an underlying issue. It's not just him being, trying to disrupt the election and all this crazy stuff.
All right. So, I'm glad we did get a chance, though, and maybe we'll hear some of that genius tomorrow, or not.
Yeah. I mean, I hope he does. I hope that maybe he can use that as a tool to, like, get him past what's going on.
And I feel like the last time this was made public, we got My Dark, Beautiful, Twisted Fantasy out of it.
Yeah, maybe.
So, who knows?
Yeah.
What else do we got up in news?
There is a rumor that Elon Musk is trying to find a way for your brain to directly hear music without, like, it going through your ears.
I think anybody who listens to the show is probably the type of person who's like, I hear music in my head all the time. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so anybody who knows me personally would be like, oh, well, that's the guy. Like, he would be for that. And I have a couple of silly things about it, but like one, like the whole personal security thing I'm kind of wondering about, like, if we were worried about subliminal messages and music in the 60s and 70s and 80s, yeah, like, you know, what if all of a sudden they're pumping something, a song I love, into my head, but it's also laced with messaging that I don't want, you know? But then my other thing, and I think, Joe, you'll appreciate this more than anybody else, is who exactly is mastering and EQing the versions that will be coming directly? You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like, don't throw me, like, the, you know, the digital remasters in my head. Like, I want the, you know, like, you give me
low quality MP3 straight to the brain.
Yeah. Like, if mobile fidelity or analog productions are involved in this, then I'm like 50% more on board. Throw the subliminal messages
in. Plug me in.
Yeah. Like, I'm all good.
Can you imagine if they, like, integrated like the Amber Alerts in there?
Yeah.
And like, you were just like listening to music and then it was not just all sudden, like, it, yeah, screaming at you.
I think when you get into that realm of things, people start thinking about, you know, chips and all kinds of weird stuff that, right, they might have to implant inside the, you for this stuff to happen.
And the 5Gs.
Yeah. Don't worry, it's going to come in the corona vaccine.
By, yes, the way, I want to go on record right now with this being recorded and going on the internet as a permanent record. It will never be funny as a prank to have Creed pumped directly into my head. I just want, I'm saying that right now. There is no April Fools. There is no birthday prank. There is no reason to do that. You can pump. I would take Nickelback 24/7 before you pump even one Creed song directly into my brain.
You know, U2 is going to be the first one.
People, by the way, that's probably a whole different episode, but people are still mad about that. Like, I don't care. Who cares? I don't care at all that U2 put that one. I mean, other than it's a shitty U2 album, but, right, like, I don't care.
I mean, how else are they going to get it to you?
Yeah.
You're not buying it.
Well, for sure. When we were talking about before, we've talked about the ways, like, Prince innovated and stuff, where, like, when you went to a Prince show, he was just like, and also, you now own my album, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, Prince did it and it was cool, and U2 did it and everybody shit their pants. And it's, yeah, like, dude, the bitrate on a U2 album, like, all told, that's like maybe 80 megabytes of your precious storage space on your phone. Like, calm down, you know? But yeah.
Did you delete it?
No, that was the thing. You couldn't delete it, right?
No, it was like locked in there.
Yeah, somehow. There was no way to delete it.
And oh, hell no.
Well, you don't like U2 at all, though.
No, but taking up space, man.
Okay, so if it was Mumford & Sons?
Okay, well, listen, first of all. No, listen.
See, what had happened was,
Apple doesn't make expandable storage.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So, like, you can't. No, no. I paid for however many gigs. You give me all.
So, not even for.
No. Not up in here.
Sweet Lord. All right. Was there at least one more?
Yeah. While we are on the subject of coronavirus and things happening.
Oh, there's one more story after this, too. I'll refresh it. The biopic.
Oh, yes.
Probably the most important music biopic ever made.
Everyone wants there to be live music again, and everyone is wondering when there's going to be live music. Well, Germany is taking it upon themselves to do sort of a human experiment of sorts.
Germans, the ones who brought us the MP3. You, yes, thought I was going another way?
So did I.
They brought us the MP3. Does anyone at this table know what the very first MP3 was that the Germans...
You told me the other day, and I can't remember.
I'm certain I did.
Yep.
Yeah, anybody? Joe? Wait. Do you know what this is?
Hasselhoff.
You would think so. You would think so. Any idea? No?
I can't remember.
Suzanne Vega, Tom Steiner.
Yes. I would have never gotten that if I...
There's like a lot of reasons why, like, the mids and the low range and on it and everything was the reason why that song was picked for them to figure out how to do the algorithm to make music digital.
But you were playing that at the barbecue the other day. And then,
Every single time that song comes out, I'm like, hey, everybody, get around. I'm gonna tell you a story.
I'll probably have to hear it 20 more times before it sticks. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, don't worry. I gotcha. And also, you'll just be able to hear this episode forever. So, yay for you. So anyways, having said that, I promise that's where I was going with that the Germans brought us.
They are enlisting 4,000 volunteers to go and see what the impact would be of the coronavirus in a mass gathering.
I should say that they're not just like, here you go, let's see if anybody gets it. Like, they're doing, like, an actual...
It's a,
like,
controlled experiment.
Well, yeah, but they're doing it, like...
With volunteers.
Yeah, but they're doing it with ultraviolet rays, and they're doing it with, like, fog machines to see, like, and a black
Who's
light.
Who's playing,
like,
this gig?
I don't know if there is anybody.
What?
I think it's just an idea that they want to... There's no one signed
they're
up to
testing
actually
it,
play
it,
the
like
show.
A large...
It just sounds like something Axl would play.
They're just testing it with a large indoor scale, and it's, like, to go forward with concerts. They're like, do you think that this could be a thing? I didn't see anybody
Couldn't
listed.
They just... Wait.
No? Well, do you want to wait?
Yeah. Joe.
I mean, I'm good with waiting.
Joe, you know the door you came in. Just get out of here with your logic.
They will be wearing contact tracers devices around their necks, and they will transmit a signal at 5-second intervals and collect data. And then there will be UV lights around the concert and to see how the virus will spread, and the vapors in a fog machine will visualize the spread.
So it's more science-y than what I didn't I'm read the entire
I'm not volunteering
article.
If there's no live music.
I know. Like, at least I'm...
I'll volunteer for a concert, but give me a concert.
Throw, like, a cover band up there at least, you know. I would, at this point, I would take...
Can we circle back to Hasselhoff? What's he doing?
Probably seeing if he can get signed to this right now.
They're doing, they did one, I guess, a controlled experiment in New Zealand for rugby fans, which was a smaller stage. I was still outdoors, I believe, and now they're doing it indoors. But it doesn't say that there's a band playing.
All right.
Either way, it's a step in the right direction.
It's somebody trying something to see.
The Germans are innovative.
Oh, it's a concert hall. It's a seated venue. So it's something to just test it out.
I want
to
get back to a live performance so bad I can taste it. So
I second that.
Yeah.
So if the sportses can have their sportses back, then damn it, I can have live performance back. What was the last piece of news that we had?
There is
finally
might be
no it's for sure it's
confirmed a confirmed Vanilla Ice biopic.
Finally,
yes,
finally. You know,
thank
there's
God.
A lot, like, we've never had a solid Elvis biopic, but there's been a million biopics, but not, like, a real one.
Yeah.
You know, but Elvis, Michael Jackson, Jimi Hendrix, you know, all these artists deserve it, but I think we all agree first in line is Robert Van Winkle.
Lord, hear our prayer.
And they better.
Amen.
They better have.
And also with you.
Suge Knight shaking him off the balcony.
For sure.
They have to.
So the thing, well, I mean, that's like, Vanilla Ice's career is like,
yeah, that's true.
I can tell you the whole movie right now.
It's going to be partly.
Got signed.
Partly an Ninja
Got
Turtle
sued.
Movie.
hold on. Got signed. Got sued. Got hung over a balcony. Did the Ninja Turtle song. Did some Home Improvement. Biopic made.
I forgot about the Home Improvement.
Oh, yeah. He's got a show still.
I'm sorry. Did a Behind the Music where he talked about getting signed, getting sued, and getting over the balcony. Left out the turtles. And then did some Home Improvement after that. But anyways, the thing that caught my eye on it is it's perfect casting. I don't know if our listeners know who Dave Franco is, but he is perfect.
Yeah.
Absolutely perfect.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
Casting for that. So I'm very, very, very excited about that. All right, cool. We're going to, we've got a fourth member to join us this week for our Jammy. Time for our Jammy Jams. And I have one that not only qualifies for last week's episode, but the episode before it.
Oh, boy, a twofer.
Yeah, that I totally forgot, and I was so mad that I left it out of both episodes that it has become my jam this week, and I've had to listen to it like 10 times. It's not even a duet. It's a triplet. Three dudes on one song.
Mm-hmm.
Rod Stewart, Sting, and Bryan Adams on All for Love, which also could qualify for the soundtracks episode. Damn it, I missed this by three shots.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but that song, I don't know why I got it stuck in my head.
It's a damn jam.
And then I was instant regret about not including it in the duets episode, and then I was like, oh, and it's also a great love song. And then just now I realized it's also a great soundtrack song. Come on, what are you doing? Yeah. I'm fired off my own show, for crying out loud.
You know the door you came in.
Right, yeah, I know. Yeah, I'll just go. So there's that, and then I've been listening to the new Margot Price LP. It's called That's How Rumors Get Started. I need to dig into it more, but I've been listening to it quite a bit. For anybody who heard her first two records, just know she's taking a slightly different direction on this record, and God be with us, Sturgill Simpson produced it, so all good thing. So I've been real about that. And then just yesterday, the Rolling Stones, or for everybody else, it'll be last Wednesday, the Rolling Stones released a new old single, like a vault single called Scarlet, and Jimmy Page is on it, and it is fantastic.
What took so long?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't even look at the story yet as to like how the hows and whys of it, but it's fantastic. It's a really, really,
really
good.
You know, these are the questions I'm going
to
ask.
I know. do you see that thing in front of you? Not the drink, but to the right of it? That'll give you the same answers I will. Yeah. Yes, what I was trying to say is Kyle will also Google it. So, anyways, moving right along. Michelle, what do you got for your Jammy Jams? Oh, God damn it, I did it. I totally didn't even... Oh, son of a bitch. Michelle, in front of our guest, the Lord, and everybody else, what are your Jammy Jams? I woke up this morning and I said, what are Michelle's Jammy Jams?
And you should know, because I texted you about one of them today. Well, I found out that last year, Hootie and the Blowfish had an album came out.
Well, hold on. We didn't start a podcast till January, so it wasn't part of music news.
And I don't hate it, and I don't love it, but it's just, it's very much more Hootie. But I was listening to that today, and that Losing My Religion cover is what
brought... Oh, you did send me that.
Yeah. And it was what brought my attention to the, it's on the new album, new-ish album, old album by this point.
New from November.
Yeah.
Still new by Hootie standards. The last one before that was at least a decade, so.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you like Hootie, it's worth checking it out. It wasn't awful by any means. And then Jen Whitmore.
That was what I never checked it out because when it did come out, I asked, like, a couple of my friends who are pretty big fans. And I was like, hey, what do you think of the new Hootie? And, like, everybody I talked to was like, it's there.
Yeah.
You know, like, it wasn't like, oh, it's bad or it's great. You know, it was just like, it's
more Hootie.
Yeah, it's just more Hootie. You know?
And the Blowfish.
So, and then also, you're just calling back to Jen Whitmore now, huh?
Well, she's slowly releasing new music.
Oh, right. Yes.
The new Jen Whitmore single, Hangover Halo, is a stripped-down version that she released, I believe, a week or two ago. Anyways, just came on my radar, and I love it a lot.
If I'm not mistaken, didn't you make me go to her concert on my birthday once?
Yep.
Yep, I sure did. I had fun.
Yeah, she's a jam, so... check her out.
Yeah. And when we put together the playlist, I'll obviously list that song, but throw a couple of her other jams on there, too, because, like, her older stuff was great.
She was
as good live as I wanted L. King to be.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And there, that was Michelle's one-syllable review of the L. King show. Kyle, what are you listening to?
Black Bear has been releasing new music. He has a couple new singles out. He has a new album coming out sometime soon. I don't know when. That...
Kyle's usual informing Jammy Jam segment.
Yes.
Somebody has an album coming out. Yeah, I don't know the name of the song. There's some stuff I was listening to.
I just seen pre-order this, pre-order that, and then I just seen it wasn't out yet, and so I was only able to listen to the whatever singles were released so far. Way more poppy than his older stuff.
Mm. Is that good or bad?
It's even more poppy than Hot Girl Summer, which is all over the radio. It just sounds like he's making songs for the radio now, which he might be. Because that's where the money's at. So
that's fine.
If they're still good, I have no problem with that.
Beyond that, it was a lot of Young Dolph and Moneybag Yo.
Sure. Michelle, any comments on that playing around your house all the time?
It was mostly in my headphones. She didn't hear much of it.
Oh, okay.
I did hear Black
usually
Bear
you have a comment about the songs playing loudly in the house.
We're playing Black Bear when it came when you get home. Mm-hmm. And we listened to it making dinner. But
I also found myself, since this whole virus thing's been going on, rappers have been doing this thing called a versus battle, and it's on, like, Instagram Live.
Yeah.
There is a DMX and Snoop Dogg one.
Oh, boy.
And I just happened upon it last night, and holy shit. Like, I forgot how much...
Is it in a good way, or is it good in a... Snoop erased DMX and we all knew he was going to.
DMX can hold his own because he has so many hits.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Okay.
He I don't know, might have been hammered or really high when he was doing it.
Yeah.
Because he's acted weird while they're recording.
Never heard that about DMX.
Yeah, so I'm not really sure what was going on there, but I forgot before watching it how many hits Snoop Dogg had with, like, No Limit.
Right.
So he plays everything that you can think of. And he's like, oh, I'm going to go with another No Limit one. And it's just I felt myself, like, nodding my head while I was watching it.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah, Snoop had a lot of cuts with No Limit that people don't really remember. There's a lot of artists, like established artists in the late 90s that had a ton of great material that, like, people don't remember, which is weird. For rock and rap, it's like 90 to 95 happened. And then, like, 96 to 2000, people are like, I don't think he put out any music. No,
yeah.
Like, one of the Prince I'm always railing about, Raven to the Joy Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
People are like, when did that come out? 99? No, Prince didn't put out any music then. Yes, he did. yes, he did.
I think people always forget about the fact that, like, I mean, Snoop Dogg hasn't really released anything new in a long time since he did, like, that the whole reggae Snoop Lion thing. But, like, before that, like, he doesn't...
I will ask you kindly to not remind me of that anymore.
The old stuff is so good. He doesn't need to release any more music. Like, I can just listen to that shit all day long.
Yeah,
like,
there's a lot of fantastic. Rock bands that feel that way.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know if you know that or not. So, watch this, everybody. Our first guest in studio, Jammy Jams. Joe, what are your Jammy Jams? I was way more excited about his than yours. I'm so sorry.
She disappointed you far more than I have.
Yeah, that's very true. What are you listening to, Joe?
I am listening to Dawes. Released a new track yesterday.
Giant surprise.
Who do you think you're talking to?
You didn't love their last record, right?
I loved every single record they
had. Yeah, but you didn't love it as much as previously? Or I could be making all that up.
I think you are.
Okay.
I mean, it's not my favorite record of theirs.
Okay.
But it's a great record.
To get back on track, what do you think of the new
It's good. Single? I've only listened to it maybe two, three times, but it's good. They've done maybe two or three, I think, singles during quarantine.
Right.
It's good.
Why do you got to use Dr. Evil? Well, it's quarantine's real. You're like, during quarantine. Yeah.
No, it's good.
Okay. What else are you listening to?
Off He Goes, Pearl Jam.
Why you got to bring up No Code? This is a family
not
show.
Off No Code. Not off No Code.
Okay.
Off their acoustic live record.
Okay.
The Ben Royal Hall.
But it originates from No Code.
It does.
You can't fool me bringing that garbage in here.
But it's just so good. Mike McCready adds way more electric guitar to it. It just adds.
So it doesn't sound like they recorded it in the garage on purpose?
They never.
There's the door, Joe. It's been nice knowing you.
This is like the fourth time someone's been shown the door in the course of 20 minutes. And
it'll just be Kyle here at the end.
And also, now I understand what you're saying back every time I insult No Code on the show. Like, now I have a live feedback on it. Because every time it comes out of my mouth, I'm like, Joe's going to be so mad.
It's just me listening going...
Oh, yeah, I know, and it's every other person being like, yeah, I know, No Code sucks. Why does he keep bringing it up? So, anyways,
no, I pull out my pocket knife every time.
Right. Oh boy,
good load. All right, what else are you listening to?
Neil Young, Homegrown, the album. It's an album.
I'm sorry, is it an album?
It is a full album. It was recorded in 74 and 75 between On the Beach and Zuma.
Oh, this is the one that
was
just released recently. Okay.
It's not brand new. It's been a month or two.
Mm. I'm still catching up on Neil Young. I need to start listening from the first one.
But it's good.
Same.
Neil Young.
But is that the era where he got sued for not sounding enough like himself?
No.
Okay. Was that that's way later?
It's way later. Okay. Yeah.
So it's from the era when he was recording like Harvest Moon and so on.
I love
it's
that
even
song.
Before that, 74. 70, Harvest Moon is in the 80s.
Oh,
mid to late 80s.
I'll stop showing how ignorant I am about Neil Young. It's after he was in Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. Correct. Yay!
One out of four.
Yeah. One out of four ain't bad. What else you got?
It's from 92.
What is?
Harvest Moon. Oh, you're right.
Oh, well, Harvest is what I meant, the classic 70s record. He's got Harvest and Harvest Moon, right?
Yes.
Neil Young, yay, two.
It's post-Harvest.
Okay.
Pre-Harvest Moon.
Gotcha.
Do we need a little tally mark?
Yeah, I'm going to get us a dry erase.
But it comprises songs that ended up on subsequent albums, like Tonight's the Night, Decade.
So in a way, it'll be along the lines of the Sign of the Times box set, where like a lot of those songs that we're going to hear ended up on other Prince projects and so on and so forth. Gotcha.
He recorded this, scrapped it, released at least Tonight's the Night.
And but it's worthwhile?
Yeah. Cool. If you're into Neil Young, it's
And that's the thing. I'm not, worthwhile. But I mean, he's extremely popular. A lot of people very much are into Neil Young. So are those? Is that the complete list of your Jammy Jams, or do you have some more here?
No, I got more.
Oh,
whoa.
Go on. What else do you got?
I've been on an 80s soundtrack kick.
That's for sure. Said the guy who sat in this house and listened to Almost Paradise at like a blaring volume with me.
Absolutely. It's
and,
on my playlist.
Mighty Wings.
Top Gun.
It's a Cheap Trick song that I'd never heard that's on the Top Gun soundtrack. And apparently I was 10 kinds of a disappointment to Joe because I'd
when
never heard
When you said
it.
Mighty Wings, I immediately thought of Sturdy Wings.
I thought of McDonald's.
Yeah, same here.
From what's that movie?
Oh, Sturdy Wings from Role Models.
Yeah.
I've been in Sturdy Wings so many years, I could play a game of Pac-Man. Great. So anyways, soundtracks, what ones are you listening to? I mean, besides all of them.
Anything Kenny Loggins, king of 80s soundtracks.
Yeah, I was going to say, so all 80s soundtracks.
Mighty Wings, Top Gun, Burning Heart by Survivor.
Which is on Rocky IV.
Four, yep. Back in Time, Huey Lewis in the News.
Back in Time.
Is that how that goes?
Yes. That is how it goes.
Will that be on your record?
Yes. Okay. I'm going to open with it.
Okay.
But yeah, the 80s soundtracks are... It was the
golden decade for soundtracks.
We covered it in great depth on the soundtrack episode. It was 70s was okay. The 90s, pretty good argument can be made for, but I
70s
mean,
were like... They were starting to get like, okay, we can do songs for soundtracks.
Yeah.
The 90s were legit major bands putting out songs that were going to be on records.
Mm-hmm.
On soundtracks.
Right.
The 80s were everybody at the top of their game putting out soundtrack songs that were just major hits.
Yep. So, yeah, we totally agree. We did a whole damn episode on it. We were in most of it centered around 80s soundtracks, I think. So, well, I've put this off long enough. We're going to have to get into this debate because we do have to have a debate to even get into the main topic. So, here we go.
It's time for the Infectious Room Podcast, main topic of discussion.
So we're going to get into greatest front persons of all time. And I say persons because a lot of people just use the phrase front man because some of the most famous ones are always men. But there are some great women who have been fronting bands. And so we absolutely want to make sure we represent both sexes in this because there are some fantastic women who have fronted bands. And I also think that they get left out quite a bit. Like, people don't usually even talk about it in the discussion at all. So having said that, I'm going to go ahead and break this egg so we can get into it. What counts as a frontman? Do you have to be from a band?
Or can you be front of a man?
Or can you be a person who fronts a band? So, and the short version is, and I'm sure everybody here is aware that this blew up on Twitter because I did a poll on it and I included Michael Jackson, and the debate came up of whether or not Michael Jackson should count as a frontman because he's known as a solo artist. And there was some debate that I heard, I understood a little bit, like he spent his childhood fronting the Jackson 5, like he was inarguably the frontman of the Jackson 5.
Right.
He was inarguably the frontman of the Jacksons, and all the way up through 84 or 5 was the last Jackson's tour. No one bought a ticket to that show for any reason other than to see Michael Jackson, so he was absolutely fronting that band. But for me, I think of him and Elvis both as a frontman because they had always had the same musicians in their band. They were heavy involved in the construction of the show, like the actual set list, the arrangement of the songs. If they were going to throw songs in the set list, it was all up to that one guy. So to me, that's a frontman. But the general thought across Twitter was, yes, he was a frontman until the bad era, and then you can't count from there on.
I think that's the general thought about frontmen or front people in general. But by definition, all it says in the definition, if you look it up on the internet,
which I did not yet,
in the dictionary, whatever, it's literally just the person fronting a band. It doesn't matter if they are, it's just the person, like most of the time it's the lead singer of the band. It doesn't specify that they have to anything. It's just the lead singer of a
person,
band.
Yeah, the
main person that you would think of when you think of the band. And so to me, then Elvis and Michael Jackson would for sure count.
Okay, because if you do count them, then there's a whole lot of gray area we don't even have to get into. Like, does Ozzy count? Does Elton John count? Does Rod Stewart count? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, Rod Stewart was the lead singer of the Faces, but like most people don't know that. And if we decide we're going to count those two in front men or front persons, then it takes a whole lot of gray area out of it for me, because pretty much anybody who's fronted a band then counts.
It literally just says a lead singer of a pop or rock group.
And this is Webster's, or where is this coming from?
This is off Google.
So aside from the Jackson 5 and the Jacksons, who was the pop group that Michael Jackson fronted?
Oh, boy.
The band that he had.
What was the name of the band?
It just random musicians. It doesn't have to be named.
The MJ guys? I'm just taking a guess.
Those guys.
Well, see, like, an Elvis's band had a name, but no one knows it. They were the TCB band.
But it wasn't Elvis, and it wasn't billed as Elvis and the TCB band.
Well, yeah, because his name
Michael
was big
Jackson
enough to carry.
And that's another thing.
Michael Jackson's name was big enough to carry the operation, and so was Elvis's.
I understand, but that doesn't make them the front person. That makes them the person. They are the person.
What do you think, Michelle?
I agree and I disagree. When you mentioned Elton John, like, I guess I don't. I know his music, but like, it's mostly him and a piano, you know? Like,
yeah,
and
Bernie Taupin wrote the lyrics.
Right, but so like, what else?
But and Elton John's had, the same people for decades in his band.
I'm not familiar with the players that he has on the road.
I know he always has the one guy on guitar that looks like a mix between Skeletor and Brian May. And like, he's been working on the Skeletor aspect of it. Like, he's always looked like Brian May, and now he looks more like Skeletor. So, but that, I know he's like always had that guy on stage.
I guess I have a blurred line between, like you said, like solo artists and
That we need to decide that before we move on, because it's very much going to put a line in the sand. To be honest, I'm totally good either way on this. I really am. Like, however we want to define this, I'm fine with.
See, when we talked about this before, I was very much the other way when you mentioned Michael Jackson and Elvis. Until I looked up the definition,
I'm like, Google got involved.
Yeah, I was like, well, damn. I guess they technically they're the front. They're the main person in the band.
And Joe, you're very much the other way.
Very much.
But can you have a band of one?
Like, if you bring up Michael Jackson, Elvis, Elton John, who did they front?
Their band.
What's the band?
There would have been no music the on band. The stage. If
okay, for Michael Jackson, it's Jackson 5 and the Jacksons. You can have that argument that Michael Jackson, as a frontman for those groups, you can have a discussion on whether or not that body of work has enough merit to say he's the greatest frontman of all time. But when it comes to his solo career, it was him and Quincy Jones, and then him and a couple other writers later in his career. Nobody from the band had any input. The input came from Michael Jackson himself.
So let me ask you this, and I don't want to put you on the spot here, but what do you got against Michael Jackson?
I'm just,
it's underscore the retro dad underscore.
It is, because
I just want to know where to send
the retro dad underscore.
Okay, I just want to know where to send everybody.
For me, when I'm thinking greatest frontman, I'm thinking of performers,
and we'll get into that too.
But like, so I guess. That's why I never thought about it the way that Joe was thinking about it, because, like, you're thinking about they didn't write the music together. They weren't, like, an incomplete
band. It's just one part of the criteria.
Yeah, so, like, when I think about it, I think of, like, if Michael Jackson was touring with the same band for years, even though he did all of the, you know, the singing and the writing, and he decided what songs to sing every night, I still think he fronted a band if it was the same people, just because they didn't get credit.
So, let me do this. Let me muddy the waters a little bit.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Let me throw Prince at it. So, before Prince named The Revolution The Revolution, it was very much The Revolution. Mm-hmm. And, like, if you listen to 1999, Dirty Mind, Controversy, it's all the same players. Des Dickerson was swapped out for Wendy Melvoin at one point, but it was the same lineup. And then they got their name legally as The Revolution on Purple Rain. Then he did 3 or 4 records with them, at least a couple of solo records, had a long string of albums with fronting the New Power Generation, who were all the same band, and ended his career fronting the three young ladies in Third Eye Girl. And it was very, like, if you look, I have the last two Prince records he released while he was alive. One is a solo Prince album, and the other is Prince and Third Eye Girl, is what the name of it is on the record. So do you call Prince a frontman from 1984 to 1987, and then not until 1989, and then from 1989 to 1995? Or,
yeah, I mean, you know, to me, what I mean? His band members were there, I'm certain, selected by him.
Ain't nobody come near a stage, right, with Prince on it.
So
Prince hand selected.
He orchestrated that entire thing and created a band to which he was the frontman.
I feel like it's different. Like, if you had, and I guess I don't know much about Taylor Swift, but I feel like she just has a band that plays with her.
See,
on
and
tour.
This is where you're muddying the waters further, which is fine. No, which is fine, because I don't consider Kelly Clarkson at all to be a front woman.
For sure. No, I'm saying, like, because it's
Taylor Swift
the
is the same way. Yeah. I don't at all consider her.
I agree.
And I know where you're going. I already know. Go ahead.
Point me.
Yeah, point you. But also, they ain't Michael Jackson. And
they also don't
have the same people with them every time. Kelly Clarkson has had the same band now for, like, 5 years. And I only remember because when I saw him live, I was like, every one of these guys is amazing. And every time I see her now, I like, look for the same people. But, like, Taylor Swift probably never plays with the same person twice, you know, and Christina Aguilera.
And they're not writing the music with her. Like, they're just like, here's the music.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Well, she very much writes her own stuff. You can tell by how downhill it's gone.
No, but I'm saying she's not like, here's your drum part and I want to hear you do it, right?
Now,
I guess I don't know.
Now, there's somebody I won't be hashtagging in this episode, because I hashtagged her one time about something I didn't like about her, and it was like when the show had like 4 followers and it was like on our 3rd week, and holy cow, were they all made aware of us. Her fan base, they were mad.
Oh, any press is good press?
Yes. I will say this about the MJ followers, all the MJ fans who piled on Twitter. I did put a thing out that was like, hey, it would be great if a lot of you would listen to the show and like follow the show, because if you like music, you know, not just Michael, but everything, like we love Michael and we love everything else. And we did gain a lot of followers out of it. And a lot of people were like, I'll listen to the show and whatever, which is cool. I said that to the Taylor Swift fans, and it just ended up in more of them telling more of them to come and yell at us. They were like, this guy doesn't like Taylor Swift. And I was like, no, I said one bad thing about her ever.
I do think when people generically think about the front man of a band, it's like Freddie Mercury or Mick Jagger or
WXOROS.
Yeah, those kind of things.
The band part is very important.
It's just, it's confusing.
So we accomplished nothing.
Yeah.
But you know what, though?
So Prince, yes.
Oh, boy. Here we come on.
Joe.
No,
Prince, yes. No,
come on. Prince is a front man.
I want to single that out and make that a drop. Come on, Joe. That's not fair. That's not fair.
It's Prince and the Revolution. Prince and the New Power Generation. Mm-hmm. Prince and Third Eye Girl. Mm-hmm. It's Prince and a band. It's billed as Prince And a
so
band.
So because his band wasn't billed.
I swear to God, I'm going to get red.
Just,
I'm going to get red spray paint, and I'm going to go over there to my copy of Bad, and I'm going to spray paint red on it. It's going to be like Michael Jackson in black, and then in Bad, it'll be in red. And then under it, I'm going to spray paint up and band.
Or
I'm
and
gonna,
the band.
I'm going to put an N between A and D on Bad.
So when Prince passed away, what happened with the Revolution? What did they do?
They went toured. On a tour.
To what?
To what? But now I know where you're going with this. Oh, Michael's band should have done that.
The band he fronted.
Michael's band should have done that.
So the band Michael's Prince fronted went on tour.
Sweet Lord.
Wait, didn't Elvis's band do something with
Elvis's band? Elvis's band still tours without Elvis Presley. Thank you, Michelle. Elvis's band right now is on tour with an Elvis Presley on film above them. One more time up top. Yeah.
And also, the same thing.
I know.
What? Please send your hate mail to.
I've got to take us a break. We're not going to be able to debate this much more. Let's just do this. When we get back, we'll talk about some of our favorite frontmen and whomever disagrees with whatever
person.
Rule just groan. Oh, yes, front person.
Yes.
Whomever disagrees with whatever just groan.
Deal.
And we'll leave it up to social media to decide. We'll be back with you guys in just a minute.
Hi there, I'm Kyle Sutton.
I'm Trisha Campbell.
And we're the hosts of My Drunk Movie Theater. Join us every week as we go through the silly things that we wind up getting up to at our jobs working at a local multiplex. We also talk about all the current events that are happening in the movie world that affect us and affect you as the viewers. Trisha?
We also get off topic quite a bit and we'll ramble, so there's that too.
Yeah, well, you know, alcohol does that to you. So hit the subscribe button. You can listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, almost anywhere that your podcast are available.
Do you enjoy video games, drinking, and attempting to solve the world's problems through ridiculous games? Spend some time with Zach and Josh on the Midwest Meltdown. This show was created by two friends who have spent the past 14 years telling funny stories, talking about video games, and anything else that comes to mind. They wanted to turn their passion for gaming into something they could share with others. Again, that's the Midwest Meltdown on Spotify, Apple Music, and Podbean. Check them out. They'd be happy to have you. Hey now, we're back, and we made zero progress on our main topic in the first half, so we are going to run with what we said before, which is if someone brings up a front person that someone else disagree with, just groan and move on. And if
or
you,
there's the door.
Yeah, or there's the door for the fifth time in this episode. And if you agree with it, then just allow the other people to discuss how great that person is at what they do. I do have a couple other questions, but these I don't think are anywhere near as controversial. What to you makes a good front person, whether or not we're talking about Michael or whatever, like what is it that makes a good front person to you? I will start with Kyle. You look like the most deer in the headlights right now,
no,
so I'm going
I
right
was
to
thinking
you.
Like the, so the opposite of how the opposite of how Billy Corgan behaves on stage.
Yeah.
Is
I literally
as a great
so
frontman.
There was a minute where you were like, I'm not quite sure. I was going to say shoegazing.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, and there's like people. There's a whole, and I gesture right toward Michelle. There's a whole genre of music that people call shoegazing. Like, for example, I don't want to name any band specific, but in the winter sometimes I go on a snow patrol, and those people are.
What do you mean those people?
I mean those people in snow patrol. Where you just stand there.
Yes.
Looking down, saying you're...
And look,
yeah.
So I seen
some emotion at it, bro.
I seen Smashing Pumpkins.
Are you supposed to do, like, jump kicks? Like, it's a sad song.
Excuse me. One of the best to ever do it, David Lee Roth, was throwing jump kicks.
He jump kicked constantly, yeah.
Constantly.
Yeah, he didn't sing sad songs like that.
Jump is a very sad song.
I was crickets.
Do you even know what Jump's really about?
I have not listened to the lyrics of Jump. Yeah.
I'll get into it sometime. It's very sad.
Do they jump?
Yeah.
What really made me realize that is I seen Smashing Pumpkins and Marilyn Manson together in concert, and Marilyn Manson's like 50 years old and puts on a great show still. And like he's very much with the theatrics and like the just everything is all like a performance.
I think we've talked about this before, but the only strike that I have against Marilyn Manson is that he's still doing the exact same shtick that he was then.
Yeah.
Now, this is coming from the person who's the biggest fan of the guy who's still at the end of his career was putting on the glove and doing the moonwalk, so like, I get, you know, it's like, it's okay when you have a thing that works, you know. I understand that, but yeah, that I was at that show, and that's you talk about totally different.
God, yeah, Billy Corgan was just standing there like, basically just, you know, I'm Billy Corgan and you should just
and even with
be into it Corgan, because I'm Billy Corgan.
With Corgan, there's not even a good old days. Like, the very first time I ever saw the Pumpkins was them opening for GNR and 90 or 91. And literally they came out and that was like smack dab in the era of like Bach and Vedder and Axel. Right. And then literally the whole time I was like, is the guitar tech singing for this band? Like, cause it's just the dude like standing there looking down, you know? And I was like, is that, that's not the guy right from this band.
He
and
just doesn't demand your attention on stage. All. I mean, there's a good old days music really, wise. Like
nobody in the band does really. No, they're, I don't think, like maybe Eha in his prime.
Maybe they're just a group of people up there playing music that, you know,
so for you just I don't want to say looking for attention, but people who you want to pay attention to what they're saying, that's your baseline for.
Yeah, like I guess I just went, that was the first time I ever seen them, and I was expecting, because it's the Smashing Pumpkins and it's Billy Corgan, to see a performance of sorts, and it was literally just him standing there at a mic and singing, playing guitar.
The only thing that was cool about that particular show was that the their lead guitar player's whole rig went down, and Corgan carried everything on his own, and I like having seen him throw a fit on stage personally over nothing, that particular show I was like, oh well, that was dope. Like look at who grew up. But other than that, it's just him. It's, and it's always been that.
I was just expecting
even
more,
in Pumpkins videos, like if you look at like the Tonight video, like he's just looking down and you're like, oh, not even for the cameras, huh? All right, Joe, I'm assuming you have some strong thoughts on this. What do you look for in a front man? What makes you say that's a front person? Sorry, Michelle, front person. What makes you look at a front person and go, that's a great front person?
Stage presence.
Number one.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't matter if you can or cannot sing. If you cannot command attention on the stage, you can't be in the discussion.
And when we refer to there's no good old days for Pumpkins,
I mean, there's no good old days as in
he never
commanded any sort of attention on stage.
No, but I was going to give a specific example. If you go back and you look at live footage of Eddie Vedder from like 91, 92, 93, the dude was wild, knocking everything over and crazy and famously climbing up things. But if you watch performances of Eddie Vedder now, he's very much just standing in one spot, but he's still got the stage presence. You still want to stare at Eddie Vedder.
Yeah.
And honestly, everybody in that band commands your attention. If you want to watch Mike McCready for 2.5 hours,
except Matt Cameron.
Everybody.
not Matt Cameron. I'm still mad that Dave Abruzzese left the band 20 years ago. So, but no, I totally agree. If you just want to sit and watch,
Okay. Let me put it this way:
Jeff Ament.
Yeah,
Jeff Ament, the bass player from Pearl Jam, has as much more stage presence than Billy Corgan does. Number one for you, it's got to be stage presence. You got to want to look at him.
Yeah, I would say number one for me is
you got to want to be drawn
stage
to
stage presence, charisma, demanding your attention, something like that.
I kid you not, I just now noticed your shirt. When we're talking about stage presence and charisma, he's wearing King Freddy over here. So, Michelle, I feel like you have no standards since you like Snow Patrol. And furthermore, you're not a Pearl Jam fan, and you fell asleep at a Garth Brooks concert, and you left a GNR concert early. So please tell us if you have any standard for a front person.
Pass. I'm just kidding.
What? I was going to say, speaking of stage presence, fucking Garth Brooks, man. Mm-hmm. Jeez. I don't even know how I didn't even bring that up.
Someone tweeted today a whole different podcast.
Not even
anything to do with, hush up.
Dude, he's like with the same band for like 20 years.
30s boxing style, put up your dukes. Right now. Do you remember when Garth introduced his band and they were all, he was like, here's a guy who's been with me since I was four.
Anyways.
You guys should duel.
We should duel. And then afterwards we'll sing a duet.
Will it be a Hamilton duet?
Who writes
duet?
His songs?
Yeah. Well, he has a hand in some of them, and but he uses a lot of
That's
guys.
That's neither here nor there.
Nashville.
It is.
Oh, Lord Almighty. We cannot go back to that. Or this will
country
be our first
singers three just, okay, they I use the writer's what? Room to...
This will be our first 3-hour episode if we go back to that. I totally had somewhere I was going with that. Oh, I'm sorry.
I interrupted you with Garth Brooks.
Well, then I interrupted you. Yeah. So to complete the circle, hold on one second. There's a completely different subject podcast today tweeted, when was the last time you got goosebumps? And I immediately tweeted back when Garth Brooks went into When You Come Back to Me Again.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
The last concert we were allowed to go to.
Yeah, that's
As soon
show
as he
so
started
good.
Singing that song, I literally turned to you and I was like, look at this. Look at this. Like, that's a good front man because he is a front man. Man, Michelle, go on with your thoughts while I mute our fourth line. But for real, what do you think?
When I think of a front person in general, I instantly think of Freddie Mercury. And the concert footage I have seen, most notably the Live Aid.
Wembley 86 or Live Aid.
Yeah. And it's just magnetic. Like, you can't... He does everything just so amazing, and you can't help but smile and, like, be into it. Now... that being said, like, that's what I feel is, like, an amazing frontman person. But, like, Snow Patrol, there isn't really one. Or Dashboard, like, Chris Caraba isn't, you know, that's not the kind of music.
But there could be, though. They're just choosing not to be.
What are they going to do? Get hyped up for the song that's really sad?
Yeah.
See, so it matters, though.
I've seen Jack White put his heart into many sad songs.
So, like, I love City and Color, right? Mm. And mm-hmm. Dallas Green is very much the frontman of that band.
Yeah.
Yes.
But he doesn't have a lot of stage presence, and he just stands in front of...
Do you hear Joe still subtly arguing his point over there? He's like, yes, like the aggressive yes.
He very much just stands in front of a mic and plays his guitar, and that's what I was going to see. Yeah. I was expecting that to happen because that's the type of music that it is.
Yeah.
So he's a good frontman. He's not the best, but Chris Carrabas. He's a good frontman. I agree. I mean, I think.
Oh, she wasn't saying he was.
No, I know.
I don't think he's bad. He's like definitely not. Your
attention. That is a criteria.
Mm.
It's the criteria. Yeah.
No, but that's my biggest criteria. And I'm not saying Chris Caraba is bad by any means. He's definitely better than Billy Corgan.
Well,
night and day.
That's the low bar.
You're setting the bar so low you can walk over it.
Yeah, no. But I've also seen bands like Alkaline Trio, which I don't know if there's technically one person. It's a trio, but the whole thing was like, I almost fell asleep. And they don't sing. They have a lot of like...
It was almost as bad as Garth Brooks.
Wait, have you fallen asleep in more than one show?
No.
How many?
Okay.
Yeah, I've seen them live on more times than I'm willing to admit on this podcast.
Do you not agree?
Alkaline Trio?
They're boring.
They're boring.
There you go.
They're boring.
But like, but the music would support a more active front person.
In theory.
But like, so Chris Carrabba's, I don't expect him to be running up and down the stage and doing something because that's not what the music supports. But Alkaline Trio has those songs and they just don't do anything. At least, I've seen them maybe twice. So like, one was at like maybe a Warped Tour, I think, and then the other one was just at St. Andrews. So it wasn't like these huge settings, but maybe they've gotten better, but it was nothing that...
They have not.
I remember it was on my birthday one year and I was so disappointed.
Confirmation from Joe, they have not. I will throw you this one. You know who was a far better frontman than I expected? Jesse from Brand New.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Especially that show we went to at the Fox Theater.
Oh, that was the best show.
That was a great show because he was super engaged and really wanted to be part, the audience to be part of the show.
Yeah, and he doesn't, but they do have more upbeat songs than, I mean, it's not just all, you know, sad Dashboard songs.
I think I disqualify your remark about it. You can absolutely get into a sad song and put on a great show.
It depends on what evidence, sad song it is.
But no, it doesn't. It's evidenced by every great heartbreak ballad ever when someone puts their...
Yeah, but that's just one song out of an entire concert. It's not like if you have an entire concert of heartbreak songs, what are you supposed to do?
Well, why are you going to see a whole concert of heartbreak songs?
Because sometimes you got to have a good cry.
Who hurt you? The guy with his arm around you.
That's rude.
They can't see us. They wouldn't have known.
So my follow-up question to that is, does a good front person have to be a great singer, or can they be a so-so singer and a great showman? We will start at the bottom of the barrel this time with Michelle.
Why am I at the bottom of the barrel?
Because you fell asleep at a Garth Brooks concert. You almost fell asleep at another concert. You left a GNR show early. Should I list it all again?
Shut up.
I'll be quiet now.
I think yes, only because they go hand in hand. I'm not going to go see a live show of somebody who I don't think is a good singer. And I feel like
Russell's expression was priceless.
Well, if they put on a great show...
Fucking process that.
If they put on a great show, then... I don't think their voice has anything to do with that.
What?
Okay.
I might as well go to the circus.
Counterpoint.
No. Oh, no.
2019 Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
Great singer?
No.
Great performer?
1969 yes. Mick Jagger. Not a great singer.
I mean, he was better, but I don't want to be cut that many times.
There you go. See? Mick Jagger.
Jim Morrison.
Jim Morrison.
Awful singer.
Fantastic.
You can look at any of the old... punk music. Great.
Joe Strummer.
Yeah, great energy on stage. Yeah. I mean, Iggy Pop and the Stooges. Yep. He's not a good singer, but he's a great performer.
Yes.
And it makes a huge difference. And I would go see him all day long.
I'm going to start some controversy here, but on the other hand, Steve Perry, arguably one of the best singers in the history of rock, terrible frontman.
Why?
He just walks from one side of the stage to the other, and when he stops in one spot, he rocks back and forth and sings that part, and then he walks to the other
physically,
side of the stage.
Physically, it's an American Idol performance with a legendary voice.
Let me put it this way. Steve Perry is such a lame frontman, and I said that Steve Smith, the drummer from Journey, got kicked out of Journey because Steve Perry was jealous that too many people were watching Steve Smith. Well, be better at being a frontman, dude. Now, again, let me back up before all the Journey fans go apeshit. The voice. People literally refer to Steve Perry as the voice. Like, I get it. great singer, terrible frontman.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think one, I think you can absolutely be a great frontman without, like, one thing I would know, we always joke about, I'm punk is not my thing, right?
Right.
At all. I would never take away from a punk performance, though. Those dudes are all over the place, and singing is the last thing on their mind.
Yeah, it's based around performance, yeah.
Absolutely.
But I would say that for me personally, it makes a difference, but I understand the points that you're making, but those aren't great for me.
But when you get in front of a great singer who's a great frontman, like, I don't know, say Garth Brooks or Axl, your reaction is to fall asleep or leave.
Well, because their music isn't that good.
You guys can take the show out from here. Right?
You know where you made me say it!
So.
Bye, guys! It's been fun 27 episodes.
I mean, anyway.
Wow.
So, anyway, so Joe, you're on the same page with that, though.
Have neither and still be a good frontman?
Wait,
what? I have an example.
I was going to say, I'm going to need an example.
Ian Curtis.
Oh, well, now Joy Division. You know you're going down a terrible road with me on that.
I understand, but he...
But yeah.
He didn't do anything on stage. I mean, he danced, but he... So he had epileptic seizures on stage.
Yeah.
He mimicked them on stage. He didn't really have a stage presence, but him standing there demanded your attention.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't a great singer. He could sing Joy Division songs. I mean,
I'm not being funny, but what if I modernize that example a little bit? Because I think he's similar. Michael Stipe, not the greatest singer in the world, and very much same kind of body.
Michael Stipe is 1,000% more animated than Ian Curtis ever
was. Okay. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Not Pearl Jam, R.E.M.
That's one.
Two.
If this is the last episode of the show, it was a success because she now knows.
Yeah,
because
she now knows Michael Stipe fronted R.E.M. Yeah, but I'm just saying in the same vein, yeah, though. No one would ever say, I'm going to R.E.M. because...
But Michael Stipe is he's an underrated singer. Is he a good singer?
No one would ever say, I'm going to an R.E.M. show because Michael Stipe's an amazing singer. And I don't think anybody would ever say, I'm going because he's an amazing showman.
Right.
But when you get there... Yeah. I mean, I only saw him on the Monster Tour, so...
To put together...
But having said that, I'm famous for not at all liking Joy Division, but... Completely point you. Ian Curtis, fantastic frontman, and could neither sing nor put on a show.
Huh?
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. I didn't even, it was so far from my mind before Joe brought it up. As soon as he started the eye on Ian, I was like, yep. And I'm being serious. I know all the time on the show, I'm like, Google it or look it up. Look up some Joy Division performances. Like, mm-hmm. That dude, if you were walking past a venue that they played, you would stop and look and be like, what is happening there? And you'd probably at least step in and be like, what is happening here?
What I need to call 911?
Probably.
Okay.
There's also a lot of acts that...
I'm going to leave it. There's a joke there, but I'm going to leave it. Go on. Not against you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, don't worry. Don't worry, Joe. There's always tomorrow night.
There's a lot of different acts that blur the lines with that, too, because, so you could use Slipknot as an example. Corey Taylor is very much the frontman of that band, but the entire band, they put on a crazy performance when you see them live.
Yeah.
Like, everyone is doing their own thing, and it's all animated and crazy. And they used to beat the shit out of each other back in the day.
That goes back to what we were talking about with Pearl Jam, too. You can just watch.
Yeah, and it's very much like you could focus on any of the members of the band, and it's still like
Dare I say to this day, Metallica's the same way. I mean, I know they've gone through a couple of bass players, one through no fault of their own, but Cliff. Watch Cliff as much as you would Kurt, as much as you would James, and if you have good enough seats far above Lars so you can see under his drum kit, you would watch Lars. And then when Newstead joined, you would watch him as much as you would the other three. And Rob DiGio, God bless him, in his stupid crab walk. People will watch him.
I find myself watching the other band members more than James Hetfield, because James Hetfield literally just stands in front of the mic and plays guitar.
He's playing rhythm.
Rob DiGio and the...
Kirk Hammett.
Yeah, there you go. But they very much get into it when they're playing and walking around. And it's very much a performance.
And Lars is incredibly animated.
Yeah.
To quote... And I don't want to get too into philosophers here, but to quote Butthead, sit down and play your drums, Lars.
So I have an example of the reverse frontman, but makes him a great frontman.
That sounds like a wrestling
move. Reverse frontman, what about?
So completely removes himself from stage presence or anything. Maynard James Keenan.
Yeah.
From Tool.
Oh, man, not on my list. And shame on you, Twitter, for no one saying that.
He is a great, great frontman, but he is the last person in the band that you would want to pay attention to.
Well, everybody talks about Danny Carey first.
Well, I mean, Danny Carey is a god.
Yeah.
But everybody
when we were discussing how people mention Neil Peart and then Mike Portnoy, generally Danny Carey is the third name to come after, you know, like just to give an idea of how good of a drummer.
I don't Tool so much, so.
I'm minuscule at best with Tool. I don't consider myself a fan because, like, I'm the guy that when Sober comes on the radio, I turn it up, and then whatever that other song is that they always gets played that goes boom, boom, doo, 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 whatever that is. Every time that starts, I'm like, this is not for me.
I'm sorry, how does
Schism?
It go?
Yeah, Schism. Is yeah, what it is. Yeah.
That, yeah. 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 Whenever Schism starts.
You Schism?
Yeah. whenever Schism starts, I Shazam it, and then I skedaddle.
But Maynard is literally in the corner, no spotlight on him. He's not even at the front of the stage.
Right.
He's back by Danny Carey, off in the corner, no spotlight, and you're looking for him.
You're looking for him.
I was.
I did. I saw Tool back in whenever the first record came out. I saw them at the Michigan State Fairgrounds, mm-hmm. and I don't remember enough about the show to remember. You know, like if
you
know,
what were you doing?
If he was doing
I saw them
waiting for Sober
years ago, 5 years ago, give or take, mm-hmm. at DTE, and it was top 10 concert I've ever seen in my life. It was
wow,
amazing,
damn,
absolutely amazing. They played everything that you would ever want to hear by Tool.
So they played. So they played Sober. No, I'm just kidding.
It was an 8-minute concert.
That is a good concert.
Oh my god, they stretched Sober out that long?
Nah, but no, totally it was. I mean, they were technically perfect. They were. It was just. It was amazing. It was everything. I mean, I'm not a Tool aficionado. I like Tool.
You are a Tool, though. I already left one joke laying on the table. I can't. You gotta pick them up.
You gotta swing at some.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I'm a Tool.
Just FYI, this is going in the thing when I put it up on social media.
Oh, yeah. This is going in. No, I like
Friend of the show,
Tool.
Joe. I'm a Tool.
Yeah. Anyways, you're a Tool aficionado. You see, if you say it all quickly, it comes out much easier.
I am not a Tool aficionado.
But no, that's crazy, though. That's that good of a show. Damn. So, Michelle, you already answered my next question, which leads me into where we're leading this whole thing is, you know, great front men, great front women, great front people. So when someone says front man, first
hands down, Freddie Mercury.
Yellow jacket.
Absolutely.
Hand in the air. Like, in a very specific Freddie, I bet.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I actually ran into a yellow leather jacket at, like, a Sears clothing. Like, it was.
Did you
like,
try it on and put your fist in the air?
And it was like just a little bit too small, and I was like, it was like $10, and I was like, I need this, and I regret it to this day for not buying it. It was like one of those things where like I can lose weight and this jacket works.
It's like my beanie jacket. My beanie jacket is weight loss goals.
We all got those clothes.
It's already on the back of my chair because someday you could have bought that yellow jacket.
Yeah, it's my dream Halloween costume if I could ever find another yellow jacket.
Always wear it with white pants.
Oh, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kyle, when you say frontman, who's the first person that flies?
I very much think of Freddie Mercury or Mick Jagger. Sorry.
Yeah. And Jagger, you know what's funny? I didn't have Jagger on my list. I'll get to it later. But
like old Mick Jagger, like back when they made.
Dude, I gotta tell you,
he still has it now.
Yeah. Still Mick Jagger.
Yeah, he still has it now.
Mick still got it, man.
It's the old music videos that get me. They're fantastic. Yeah. Fantastically bad, but like he does such an awesome job at performing
the Dancing in the Street video. Yeah. But yeah, I swear to God, I thought you were going to say Michael Jackson.
What's that guy's name?
Joe. When you think frontman, first name that pops in your head,
Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, and me too.
I mean, he's the gold standard of frontman.
I think when I first saw Wembley '86, Queen live at Wembley in '86 was the first time where I was like, "That's how a guy should stand out." Because the only thing I'd seen visual wise before then was like the early '80s videos, mm-hmm. and so like Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers had a lot of videos, but there weren't a lot of like live ones where you would like watch Tom doing something, you know. And like I'd seen live footage of Journey, as I said before, not a great frontman, you know.
Right.
And then when I saw Freddie, to me it was almost like, well, that's a Freddie solo show, and then the other three members of Queen just happened to be there.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, he owns that situation. Yeah, I mean, he just owns that. And he's a career long, like, you know, the whole time he was around. So I think most people, that would be who they think of first.
I would think so. Or Mick Jagger. Yeah. I mean,
did you just say most smart people? Solid.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
That's it. Make a whole bunch of people mad.
Jagger as well.
Yeah. Or Michael.
Now, I don't want to get
Hutchins. Hutchins, yeah.
We'll get to him in a minute. I have him on my list as well. Now, I really don't want to backpedal to the whole who is a frontman debate, but I do want to make a case for specifically Elvis Presley from 69 to like 73. The dude, like, whether or not you want to consider him a frontman, like, anybody listening to the show, please go to YouTube and just type in Elvis Presley, That's the Way It Is, and watch whatever song comes up. That dude owned it on stage. Yeah. Like, absolutely owned it. And it wasn't all about, you know, hip swiveling and that stuff. It was about directing, like, literally directing the show as it was. He had a 5-piece band behind him. He had 2 vocal groups and a full orchestra. And that dude was literally reaching up over the band at points to, like, conduct the orchestra instead of the orchestra conductor, you know, and, like, turning around, giving direct commands to, like, the drummer, the bass player, whoever, like, on the fly. And it's just magnetic, you know. I just, you, everyone in this room knows this, but one of my least favorite phrases is old fat Elvis.
Yeah.
People think that once Elvis hit 1970, he just became overweight and then died. And the dude owned the stage masterfully for a select set of years. And the only reason why I cut off at 73 is because there's not really a lot of, there's a ton of good recorded material after that, audio material, but there's not really any good video of him after that point. So if I'm going to tell people to look it up, you know, I don't want you looking at some like 8mm shaky cam footage of, you know, the Silver Dome in 75 or whatever. I'd rather you look at, you know, the professionally shot 1970 footage, you know.
Who the hell's sneaking in an 8mm camera?
I was literally just thinking that.
There's shitloads of Elvis. There's shitloads of Elvis 8mm footage in the 70s. I don't know if there was a taping policy or what. Like, it was,
they must
okay.
have just not cared back then.
They must have, like, it's going to look like shit when you get home.
Yeah.
There wasn't an anything policy in the 70s.
Yeah, that's for sure. But yeah, you know, even Madison Square Garden, one of my favorite Elvis shows. I don't know why they didn't film it, but there's 8mm fan footage that's been synced to the live album.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, at least you can get an idea of what it looked like while you're listening to it. But then I just reminded myself, too, there's bands like Pink Floyd that don't have, like, Roger and Dave have sang the, like, I don't know who you would call the front man of Pink Floyd.
To me, they're both.
Yeah.
But I didn't even think of them as having a quote-unquote front man.
I think Dave was the face of the band.
I guess.
After Roger left.
I guess, but.
You would never, I would never even think to bring them into a discussion about.
No, because, I mean, they're great for that band, and they're great in the scope of rock music, but as far as front men fronting a band,
yeah,
I mean, they're not on the same level as Freddie or Mick or
Bruce
Springsteen, any of these guys.
Right, exactly, and there's a lot of bands like that, too, like Nobody and Toto, would you think of as the front man, you know, Asia. There's a million 90s bands.
You framed an Asia poster?
You framed an Asia poster? So before we continue talking about front men, let's get the ladies involved. And by the ladies, I, of course, mean anybody but Michelle.
Use the term loosely, huh?
What do either of you guys have any ladies that you brought to the table?
I thought of one while you're talking, and I don't know if she counts, but we saw her at DTE, and I thought she put on a great show. Florence and the Machine.
Yeah, it's Florence and the Machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, she for sure counts.
She put on a great show.
She put on a phenomenal show. And she was out there and singing her heart out and running around and putting so much feeling into it.
I can't believe she wasn't on my list. Damn it.
She is fantastic. She puts on a great show.
That's a great one.
She is fantastic.
And let me ask you this. Person. Is Stevie Nicks or Christine McVie?
Christine McVie, definitely not. Like, she was just always behind her keyboard.
Okay,
just,
I don't, you know. Yeah.
But yeah, Stevie's very much center of the stage. Mm-hmm. I think if anybody counts as the front person of Fleetwood Mac in their heyday, it would be Stevie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, she's on my list. I mean, she's not at the top.
Yeah.
But she...
And she puts on a show, and nobody's got a voice like her.
Yeah, those are my two women.
Kyle, do you got any of the ladies on your list?
Laura Jane Grace from Against Me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, very good that we called it front person.
Yes.
Episode. She's very unique in that she was a fantastic front man and now is a fantastic front woman.
Yep.
Yeah, he lost nothing.
Yeah.
Like, it got
it carried over.
As good.
Yep, I agree.
I know, Joe, you have a much bigger list of ladies than I do, so at least throw one at us, and then I'm going to throw a couple out there that I have.
All right, I'm going to give you a couple. I'll give you one that we can discuss as yes or no, and I'll give you one that I'm sure we agree on.
Well, it's going to be no, because of the Michael Jackson thing. I'm going to be like, no, not a front person.
Debbie Harry.
Yeah, Bonnie. Yeah.
Debbie Harry is
that your debatable one?
No.
I was going to say, what are you just shooting fish in a Bear
that's
Pearl.
That's my top three.
Fantastic.
Really? That's your top one?
One of my top. Well, for women.
Females? Okay.
Yeah. The one that you can debate whether or not is Beyonce Knowles.
Mm-mm. If Michael don't count, Beyonce don't count.
But doesn't she count for Destiny's Child?
Doesn't Michael count for half of his life when he
didn't say he didn't count.
And neither did I.
I'm directing my anger at the wrong person. Doesn't Michael count?
Do we have a rewind feature on this? Because you can go back and listen where I said his Jackson's material absolutely count.
So the 10 minutes where Beyonce was part of a 4-person or 8-person that got down to 3 or something, Destiny's Child, you're counting that. You're not counting everything she's known for since then.
She is a front woman who I think did a fantastic job.
Yeah, she's a front woman, yeah.
But she was great in that band. What is Destiny's Child without Beyonce?
Yeah, I second that. Destiny's Child would be nothing without Beyonce.
Kelly Rowland.
Well,
exactly.
Let me ask you this. Who was in Freddy vs. Jason? Kelly Rowland.
You know what? Point, Russ.
And you need a gavel.
I'm going to give you the law and order thing.
And Wilson?
I would say she's on my list. And the only thing about that is
I said I'll give you two. I got like 15.
The only thing about Ann Wilson and why I hesitated to put her on my list is I feel like Ann and Nancy come as a package. Like people always say Ann and Nancy. And you would look at, if you go to a hard show, you're going to watch Nancy as much as you do Ann Wilson.
And I'm not smart enough to know the names of the ladies in the B-52s, but both of them.
Kate and Cindy. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Both, neither of them on my list. But hold on. Before you go on, let's back up to Heart here real quick. I want to mention that one of the reasons why people didn't look at Ann Wilson so much is she got completely shafted by the industry in the 80s because of her weight. Mm. They were very interested in selling the thinner sister.
Yeah.
So there were whole videos.
It's still very much like that today.
Now, there are songs on Heart albums that, there's a big hit, These Dreams, that Nancy did sing, mm-hmm. but Ann Wilson is the voice of Heart. Ann Wilson is the voice. And in the 80s, there were many videos where they would have Nancy mime most of the song because they were like, well, she's the thinner sister. So I think,
what?
Yeah. So I think, yeah, I can show you some videos and you'll be real mad. And, the CNC Music Factory thing where they had Martha Wash do the vocals but then put Zelda Williams in the video.
There's a lot of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of things like that. But I feel like Ann Wilson kind of got the shaft on that. Like, as far as if people don't think of her as the front person, it's because you see the footage of her doing Barracuda when she was thin, and then you fast forward 30 years like it never happened to where now she looks thin by industry standards, and so they show her more. I feel like that image was kind of put together by the industry, and more people should go back and watch Ann at any weight. You know, like Ann at any weight is a great front person with an amazing voice.
Agree.
I had Ann Wilson on mine, a more modern example, and she very much fronts a band, so help me God, is Susan Tedeschi. For years, was a solo artist and now fronts the Susan Tedeschi Trucks Band.
Yes.
Is it the Susan Tedeschi?
No, it's okay. Tedeschi Trucks.
No, I was like, I've been saying it wrong this whole time.
and she very much, like a Hetfield, she's responsible for the vocals and she plays the guitar, but she works her way around the stage. She puts on a good show.
Have I seen her?
Susan, you saw her open for the Black Crowes show that you texted all the way through.
So, no.
Yeah, so, no. Well, let me say this. She was performing about 300 feet in front of you. You were looking at your phone the whole time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, no, I haven't seen her.
Yeah. I'm bringing up, like, 7-year-old wounds here.
At least.
Yeah, at least. But, Susan, I have on my list. I had Ann Wilson on my list.
I have a couple more modern ones.
Well, hold on. I got one more lady that I'd like to mention. I have two more ladies I want to mention, but this one for now. Front person of the 10,000 Maniacs, Miss Natalie Burchin.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sir.
That woman launched a billion copies of 10,000 Maniacs Unplugged with her stage presence and glorious voice.
Yeah.
She has a stage presence about her that I would argue if Natalie Merchant was a terrible singer, you would still say she was in the running.
You know what's interesting to me is Natalie Merchant, the person, has almost no stage presence. Natalie Merchant, the voice, demands the stage presence.
Absolutely. And you know who was not on my list but is very much the same way is Beth Gibbons from Portishead. If you hold on, the adults are talking. Beth Gibbons, and I've told you this before, like when Portishead does Only You, mm-hmm. Beth Gibbons will sing that song like you owe her more money to get into the show, and you're like, is she singing right to me? You know, and it's not even the best voice in the world, but the stage presence and the voice together is,
Yep.
I have one more lady, but I'm going to hold off on that. Who else do you got on your list?
For modern, I have three solid ones. Karen O from the AAS.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Haley Williams.
Yep.
Paramore.
I disagree strongly, but go on.
Me too.
Brittany Howard.
The Oh, we miss her!
Son of a...
Brittany Howard is one badass woman.
This is... So we're taking a break in a couple of weeks. Like, we're taking a two-week break from the show, and I plan to put a like a highlights reel thing together to put out while we're on break. That's going on the highlight reel. I've never felt more dumb on my own
we
show.
Messed up.
We so messed up.
I for sure thought you would get in at least two of three of you.
And the one time I had the privilege to see Brittany Howard be amazing live, mm-hmm. she did her thing right after Father John Misty got done sucking for an hour.
Like she was on stage.
Like whatever she did would have been amazing, and then she was amazing on top of that. Damn it, good call, Joe. Damn it. Hold on, Kyle, do you got another lady?
Yeah,
or you?
What about Courtney Love?
See, she's on my list there.
Yeah,
Courtney Love.
Courtney Love. Great one. Even though she might have killed her husband.
Right.
She's still a great frontwoman and
have you
performer.
Ever seen Courtney Love
live? No,
you got to.
I've never
She's
seen
She's magnetic, man. I saw her with Hole in whatever year they were on. They weren't the headliner, but they were high up on Lollapalooza in 95. I think Sonic Youth was the headliner, which is why I left early. But
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. Well, I made sure to get ahead of the traffic, but there were already a ton of other people leaving since Sonic Youth was headlining.
Right. Outro music. I'm gonna go.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but anyways, I saw her back in like 94, 95, and she was amazing. And then I went and saw her at the casino like 2 or 3 years ago, and she was astounding again.
Just like 10 years ago.
Or whatever. Two, 3 years ago, 10 years ago.
I believe you're still living at my house.
No, for sure.
Yeah.
So easy 10 years ago. Anyways, she was still fantastic.
And she's another one. She can't sing worth a damn.
What?
Yeah, I mean, well, she can in the studio, but that's up for...
Go to YouTube.
What's YouTube?
Oh, yeah.
I forget.
Yeah, she needs help when you...
YouTube.gov. Go to YouTube for her. And pull up the isolated vocals from one of her shows and try to make it through the entire video without needing ibuprofen.
No, I believe she just has a good... She has a great stage presence.
Absolutely.
That's what it is, yeah.
But that's what I was saying is we were talking about people who don't need to be able to sing to have a good stage presence.
Go.
She doesn't.
Yeah.
But she demands your...
Total side note, I just recently found out that Patty Schemmel, the drummer from Hole, did not drum on the entire Celebrity Skin album, and I'm super mad about it.
Why?
Because I love Patty Schemmel, and she's in the pictures on the album. And
why didn't she drum on the whole album?
I'm sorry, slow talker. Clarify your question in the first place.
You should know.
I said I was mad, and you went, why? And I started to explain why I was mad.
No, why wasn't she on the whole album?
Oh, right. That's a better question to ask.
I'm a tool.
And I watched and you're a Hole fan. There's a documentary about Patty Schemmel that I didn't know existed. And it's called You're a Fan of the Band. It's called He Hit So Hard is the name of the Patty Schemmel documentary.
Yeah.
And about halfway through recording that record, the producer was like, yeah, there's a drummer that can do this better than you. She was like, but I'm the drummer for Hole. And he was like, yeah, but there's a drummer. And then, according to her side of it in the documentary, which I of course believe because this is how the music industry goes, the producer just kept telling her he would make her do like 100 takes on a song, and he would just be like, nope, not good enough.
I watched that. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, and he was like, he was just like reading a magazine, and she would do like the 100th take, and he would just be like, nope, not good enough, do it again. And he just beat her into being like, okay, I can't do this. And they brought in Dean Castronovo, who I hate with a passion. He's a session guy that I just can't stand for a number of reasons. And he, for 25 years, I've been air drumming along to like Malibu and Awful and Celebrity Skin, seeing Patty Schemmel in my mind, and it's really Dean Castronovo, and I'm really upset about it. So, also, do you know who wrote that song, Celebrity Skin? Because it wasn't Courtney Love.
No.
Billy Corgan wrote that song on a bet. He told Courtney Love he could write a bigger hit for Hole than her in like 5 minutes, and she was like, bullshit, and they had a bet on it, and he wrote Celebrity Skin in 5 minutes.
Billy Corgan.
And then that's one of their biggest hits.
That's crazy.
He came to her with it and was like, you know, this is going to be a huge hit, and she was like, that won't, and it's arguably Hole's biggest hit.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Who else do you got for ladies, Joe?
Janis Joplin.
Nope.
Big Brother. Noah's in not a front person, or Noah's in you disagree she's not good?
Noah's in not a front person. I don't actually know.
She was a front woman for Big Brother and the Holding Company.
I just like to argue with you.
That story checks out.
But yeah, Janice, great call.
Dolores or Reardon from the Cranberries?
Strong disagree. I don't dislike her, but I don't ever think of her as a strong front person. And I know she has an extremely strong fan base. I just, not my thing.
Two more. Gwen Stefani.
Strong disagree. She is a front person.
Yeah.
I agree that she's a front person.
Okay.
The end.
Not a good one is what you're saying.
No. Okay. She's better than Billy Corgan.
Well, yeah, but my shoelaces are better.
Yeah, he's the lowest bar.
My shoelaces are better frontmen than Billy Corgan.
Joan Jett.
Oh, strong disagree. First of all, and don't say Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, because no one's ever referred to any member of the Blackhearts as a band, ever.
But it's Joan Jett and the Blackhearts.
Oh, for the love of crying out loud. This is... So, what you're telling me is everyone you've ever known says that song by Joan Jett and the Blackhearts.
Yes.
No.
You know what my favorite part of this episode is? What? Is that it's not all directed at me.
I've been paid to take the heat off.
He's my cooler.
I would assume we're going to swing it back over to the gentleman. I'll just burn through a couple names that I'm not sure how other people feel like. Well, I think the three of us at least agree on Michael Hutchence from NXS.
And yeah.
Just fantastic front man. Like, and I think he gets just not even near the credit he deserves. Like, I think everybody should go look up, and I want to make sure I say this right, Live Baby Live, their live performance from Wembley. Look that up on YouTube, and inside of two songs, you'll just be like, how did I not know this guy was such a great front person?
Michael Hutchence had more Freddie Mercury in him than anybody else since Freddie Mercury.
I will disagree with that because I have a very modern example who you've seen with me, Michelle, and I refer to him as Freddie Jr.
Nate Roos
from Fun. Nate Roos is, he's got all the Freddie in him, but I'm not at all taking away from Michael. Michael Hutchence absolutely had a lot of Freddie in him.
Had.
On account of passing away, yes.
Too soon.
So he had a lot of Freddie Mercury in him before he passed. Oh, way, way, way too soon. Michael Hutchence is one of those unfortunate rock and roll tragedies. There's a great documentary about him called Mystify that you should watch that really details like what went wrong and how. And it's, obviously it's sad because of the outcome, but the opposite of sad, Paul Stanley, we referenced him earlier. Yeah. That dude, whether or not you like Kiss, that's a hell of a front man.
He is the front man over Gene?
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
For sure.
I don't know much about Kiss, but you always hear more about Gene than you do about Paul.
Gene's good at marketing himself.
He's the face of...
Wasn't that what a front man is?
I know, because... I don't know. I feel like Gene Simmons is the face of Kiss.
See, I agree. But I think Gene Simmons is the face of Kiss, and Paul Stanley is the front man.
Gene
Simmons is more marketing.
Well, yeah. Because when I think front men or women, I think I'm thinking of the music part of it. So the music part of Kiss is Paul Stanley. The marketing, the money part of Kiss is Gene Simmons.
I think, a lot of when people think of Kiss, they think of Gene Simmons doing the tongue thing on stage.
Right. Yeah, and the blood and all that.
Yeah, yeah. So they very much made him like a theatrical part of it, but he was not the front man.
Yeah.
No, I absolutely
Gene
agree.
Sang a couple of Kiss songs, a couple of hits. Peter Criss even got to sing a Kiss hit. Nobody likes Peter Criss. Ace Frehley got to sing a couple of Kiss hits, but by and large, Paul's the voice of Kiss, and very much, I mean, when you go to a Kiss concert, there's one guy giving out the commands, and it's Paul Stanley. You know, people, and every time we do this one, the place lights up just like a damn Christmas tree.
Oh, boy.
And I almost cut that for this episode. I wanted to use it as a drop. And I stopped myself. But trust me, it sounds just like I did it. Many people can attest to the fact that it sounds just like that. But a couple other ones I want to go through that maybe folks won't agree on. Chris Robinson, I think, from the Black Crowes, is an extremely underrated front man. Not so much now. He can go to hell now. But he used to be quite an amazing front man. I think under used to be, and you guys are very clear on my thoughts on this, I think Axl Rose used to be one of the greatest ever. And I want to be clear that I'm not making a statement on his weight or anything like that. Like, I understand how age works, and I know eventually you're not going to be able to sing that high, and I get all of that. But Axl Rose, I put in the same category as John Bon Jovi, where there's almost like you can almost take it to a distinct date where he stopped caring about putting on a good show. Axel's been the same size for 10 years, and he used to very much care in 2009, 2010, 2011. GNR, one of the best GNR shows I've ever seen in 30 years of seeing GNR shows. shows happened in 2012, and he was the same size as he is now, but somewhere along the line, he just was like, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and go through the motions. And, you know, Bon Jovi did that around 10 or 15 years ago. John Bon Jovi was like, I think I'm going to stop trying, you know, and let me just count the money and go, you know, half-ass sing the song, and that'll be it. I don't know if we can count this as a band, but Stevie Ray Vaughan in Double Trouble, whose front man was Stevie Ray Vaughan. I mean, that's how you hold a guitar and put on a show at the same time.
Yeah.
I would count it.
With a cigarette hanging out of your mouth.
Yeah. And several other things. I mentioned Nate Roos. I think Nate Roos from Fun is, you know, and that's one of the things. I hope they make a comeback because other people should get to see them. You know,
absolutely.
You remember I went and saw them at St. Andrews right before they broke. Mm-hmm. And I just was like, you got to see this. You got to see this. You got to see this.
I remember that.
As soon as you saw him, you were like, oh, my Lord, that's it. Like, he is. He's Freddie Jr. You know, fantastic, fantastic frontman. We didn't mention specifically Eddie Vedder. We were doing more arguing earlier, but I think Eddie Vedder should come up in the conversation. I've got some other ones that came up from Twitter suggestions that I want to get into, but it's been a minute since we went to you, Kyle. Who else do you got on your list?
Scott Weiland.
Yeah. Now, we were talking, I don't think he, this is just my opinion, I don't think Scott Weiland qualifies for all-time greats.
No, but he's a great frontman.
Absolutely a great frontman, and if you're going to talk about the 90s, I think he's top 10.
Yeah.
Easy. But I just, you know, when you're throwing around names like Jagger and Freddie Mercury, he's just not.
Yeah, they're not in the same. They're not the same caliber.
In the obvious one of Michael Jackson, you know, when you're throwing around those names.
What adds fuel to the Weiland fire is when he was removed from the band. What did they do? Nothing.
Yeah, totally nothing. Yeah,
they tried to replace him. And they tried to do something else, and it's not. It's just not STP without Weiland.
Yep, that's true.
He more or less stepped into Axl Rose's shoes. I mean, he was fronting most of the Use Your Illusion lineup of GNR, and he was every bit of a big draw to Velvet Revolver as the other guys were that were coming from the established rock act. You know,
didn't I almost get your tickets to see Scott?
You absolutely almost did once.
Not Scott Stapp. Scott Weiland,
who thankfully I saw several times because he passed on. Not long after you almost got me tickets. The sidebar joke there is that Michelle was at a casino once where all she had to do was walk across the casino and could have got free tickets to a Scott Weiland show. And she instead texted me the next day and was like, hey, I almost got you Scott Weiland tickets last night. And the thing with almost got you Scott Weiland tickets last night is should be like, oh, there was a drawing and I entered a whole bunch of times and like I didn't win, but you know, I almost got. No, it was just that she just didn't walk across the casino to get the tickets.
And they were like, well, like you could. I was like, is there any upgrades or anything like that? They're like, well, no, but Scott Weiland's playing tonight, and I don't think it's sold out. So you could just like go to the concierge desk and, you know, ask for tickets. And I was like, okay,
where's my room key?
So hold on. To be clear, what she just said in a long-winded way was, and then I didn't walk across the casino.
So for like half the time, I thought it was Scott Stapp.
You're not helping.
If that's your thought process, I back on that.
Yeah, but how do you mix those two up, though? I don't know. How do you even
with
mix?
With arms wide open.
Oh, yeah. Good one. Okay. Do you have any other front people to share with us, Michelle? I mean, you seem to be the gold standard on what's a good one and what's a bad one.
The gold standard?
Yeah.
You guys mentioned online.
All right. Well, hush up, then I'll just mute your line.
You're going to what?
Mute your line.
Oh, okay. Okay, bye.
do you have more?
What about Kurt Cobain?
I saw Nirvana a couple times, and I wouldn't say Kurt was a bad front man at all, but I let me put it this way. He wouldn't be in my top 10 of the 90s. As far as like the criteria we were talking about, like when I saw Nirvana twice, I saw him on the Bleach tour and I saw him on the In Utero tour, and both times I watched Dave the whole night. At no point was I like, oh, I should be looking at Kurt Cobain. So
Dave Grohl's a great front man.
Dave Grohl is a fantastic front man. Dave Grohl can front the band from the drums. If you watch Foo Fighters performances where like him and Taylor Hawkins switch, he can front from the drums. If their drummer comes up to the mic, you're still looking over.
Like Phil Collins.
Phil Collins, terrible frontman, but a great drummer.
I don't know anything of their live stuff. So.
Great drummer though. Joe, what else you got on the deck?
Probably the most underrated frontman of all time ever. It is Gord.
Is it me? Is it me? Oh, and I knew you were going to say this. I knew you were going to bring this to the discussion.
Gord Downey from the Tragically Hip.
Yeah,
and what Gord Downey has everything you would ever want out of a frontman.
That sound you just heard was all of the Canadians tuning in at the same time.
He has everything you want. He has stage presence, charisma. He can sing his ass off.
Do you know?
He commands your attention.
Of course, I'm not being funny about this topic. I still can't bring myself to watch the documentary about the last. It's about the last year or few years of his life.
It's about the last year. year or so.
I can't. He,
leading up to the
Gord Downie, so, passed away of cancer, correct? Mm-hmm.
He had brain cancer. He was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer in 2015?
That checks out.
Around 2015. And they ended up going on their last tour in 2016 in Canada. Mm-hmm. It was a short, maybe 10, 12-night tour, and it ended up in Kingston, Ontario, which is their hometown. And they played.
And the documentary is about that last mm-hmm. tour, right? Yeah. I can't bring myself to watch that.
They played to a packed house of everybody bawling their eyes out, including the Prime Minister. Huh. And every major city in Canada was shut down. Every bar was open. Everything was just focused on this. He was a national treasure in a way that I don't think any American band would command.
Yeah. No, I agree.
I can't think of an American band.
I can't
band
bring myself
would,
to watch that documentary yet. I'll get to it.
There's a clip on YouTube of their last song of the last performance is Ahead by a Century. And it involves absolutely zero stage footage. It's just the audio of the song and different footage of bars or outdoor venues or different places where in the arena, all these places listening to the feed. Mm-hmm. And everybody's bawling their eyes out.
Not making this any easier to watch.
What I'm saying is the man was a national treasure.
Yeah, for sure.
And nobody outside of Canadian bordering cities in the United States knows the Tragically Hip, basically.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean,
yeah, he's one that I would not have got mentioned if you weren't here. And I knew when we were like, oh, Joe's going to be on this episode, it's going to be frontman. I knew you would bring it up. And I'm really glad that you did because I completely forgot to mention him on my own. From Twitter, when I did put out the poll the other day, and I said basically one of the poll things was like, you know, you can just vote other and leave your comments. Some of the ones that I didn't even think of, which I'm ashamed of some of these, was Dave Grohl came from Twitter. A lot of votes for Grohl. James Hetfield, a lot of people had that. Mick Jagger, a lot of people had that. Robert Plant, who we know.
Oh, yeah. Mentioned. Damn.
He's on my list.
Sure he is. Whoops. Produce the evidence.
Damn it.
I don't see that.
On this show, we're used to saying that and then nobody being able to back each other up. That dude just pulled out a piece of paper and had it right there.
Rip it up.
One that I cannot believe was not on my list, Diamond David Lee Roth.
He wasn't on my list.
But
the aforementioned jump kicks alone get him on the list. I mean, and that's, for me, the age-old debate of Sammy versus Dave, is that's always been my defense. Like, the reason why I preferred Dave is Dave was a showman and a frontman. Mm-hmm. Sammy, hell of a singer, hell of a songwriter, but when you went to a Van Halen show pre-Sammy, you split your time watching Eddie and Dave. And when you went to a show from Sammy on, you watched Eddie and listened to Sammy.
Right, yeah.
And that's the difference for me. And then the Michael Jackson fans all over the earth would very much like us to know that he fronted the Jackson 5, that he fronted the Jacksons, and then went solo and had the same band his entire career for the rest of his time. And I say they want us to know that because 13,000 people looked at our tweet. I'm not making that number up. 13,000 people looked at our tweet, and I would say, I don't know, 7,000 of them wanted to remind me that he fronted those two.
Thank you. Thank you for reminding
us. So it's very important to them that I mention that. And, you know, I personally always counted him that, but it was because when I was a kid, I came up on the Elvis side of things, where I just looked at Elvis as a front man. So for me, it was that way. So I want to say that we are going to top ourselves from last week. I'm pretty sure after editing is done, this is going to be even longer than last week. And last week was our longest episode yet, by a long shot. I'm not sure if Michelle wants to, but I want to thank friend of the show, Joe, for coming on the show.
Yes, me too.
Thanks.
With us. And,
thank you, Kyle.
Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Russ. Michelle, hello.
Good day.
Yeah. I said good day. I will say I'm always pimping our social media and everything, but I do want to say, like, I know the listeners of the show have an opinion on this.
Take the social media.
Like, I think we've covered most of the bases, but if we left somebody out, by all means, do that. But what I want to hear from people on is, what is a frontman? Do you count?
We still never figured that out.
The bad tour on, you know, as a frontman. We're not going to count votes like we do the bonus episodes. I just want to see the discussion. You know, basically, I'm calling for people to tell Joey's wrong.
It'll never happen.
What I'm looking for.
They said Joey, and I was like, wait, who is Joey now?
Yeah. So, I mean, and another
the
thing.
People closest to me call me Joey, but you can call me Joe.
I can Ruxin.
So another thing that I think is interesting about this episode is we really didn't mention a lot of specific songs past our Jammy Jams. So I think it's going to be neat where I'll just give you a list of the artists that we mentioned and you can pick some songs. And, you know, I'll, of course, leave some.
Nope.
Leave some. Joe has his hand raised. Is there someone you're desperate to mention before we get out? Or is there specific?
No, it goes along the lines of the songs.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're looking to kind of get some footage of the people that we've discussed, I've made a list of quintessential frontman performances.
Would you be so kind as to leave that on the post on Facebook for folks to go find?
Absolutely.
I'm not asking you to, like, don't do all the YouTube links and everything, but...
No, I'll leave links.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Hey. You're going to do way more work on social media than some people.
On this post, it'll be
easy to find because she'll pin it.
I'm not going
to
pin it.
No, you do the pinning. You're the pinning, right?
I am the pinner, kind of.
That's what I've heard.
Are you going to leave some very specific examples?
I have maybe four or five quintessential performances.
I'm like, this is why you should.
This is a front man. This is what a front man or a front woman.
Are you going to leave a link to all of Queen Live at Wembley 86? Or at least the whole Live Aid performance, I would
track
assume.
Track by track.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I'm honest to God trying to wrap things up here, but I can't believe I left Gary Sharon out of this discussion. Should be much wider known than he is, but just based only on the Queen tribute performance, that dude is in the discussion for greatest frontman of all time. He's absolutely fantastic. Next week, when the three of us reconvene, we are going to be talking about artists and songs that have changed our life, which I think will make for a pretty interesting conversation. Joe, we'll make a vote after you leave and find out if you're welcome back on the show or not. Spoiler alert, it's going to be 2-1.
Which two?
So, yeah, I wonder which two it'll be. Joe. Friend of the show, Joe, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for having me.
This was great. Podcast. And we will take our leave and talk to you next week. Without Music, Life Would Be a Mistake. Bye.
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 The Infectious Groove Podcast is hosted by Russ Robinson, Kyle Wimple, and Michelle Kosalecki. Produced and edited by Russ Robinson. Intro and outro music composed by Chris Kimmel. Opening credits read by Stacey Robinson. Recorded with a Rode Podcaster Pro and Rode Pod Mics.